Hello and welcome to The Paul Garcia Show, where I speak to remarkable people from the central Illinois area. Today I'm speaking to Dana Wright, who is a counselor at Safe Journeys. Safe Journeys is a wonderful organization out of Streeter, Illinois, where survivors of domestic and sexual violence can find support, resources, and strength as they journey toward healing and thriving. It's an incredible organization, and I'm sure this conversation will be very enlightening, perhaps even emotional, so get ready. But first, before we begin, do you have neck or back issues? Be honest. Do you prefer sitting on furniture from this century? Would you rather your home interior look like it's from a Modern Living magazine than from the Great Depression? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I urge you to shop at Fairbury Furniture in downtown Fairbury, Illinois, where they have loads and loads of the most stylish, trending, and comfortable furniture around. That's Fairbury Furniture in downtown Fairbury. This show is also sponsored in part by Brand Martial Arts in downtown Fairbury as well. Michael Brand is a Hall of Fame martial artist, and he is the primary instructor at this great martial arts academy. He's excellent with kids and teens and adults, and I personally train here quite often, and I love it. So if you're looking to enter the world of martial arts and you're in the area, then shoot Brand's Martial Arts a message on Facebook. They're always accepting new students. Brands Martial Arts in downtown Fairbury. All right, and now without further ado, here's my conversation with Dana Wright. So Dana Wright, thank you so much for coming on to the show today.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited.
Absolutely. So can you tell us a little bit about what it is exactly that you do at Safe Journeys?
So my position at Safe Journeys is an adult counselor. So someone that is 18 and up. I mostly work with sexual assault survivors. I do see some domestic violence survivors, but counseling specifically is working through the trauma that they've been through. I mean, going through these ordeals, it's a lot. So we go through coping strategies. We set up goals, building relationships back up. What do healthy relationships actually look like? And we go through that together. We at Safe Journeys like to view it as a healing journey, and everyone on that journey is at different points. So when I come in contact with a client, I'm starting where they're at. If they already have all this figured out and they just want someone to bounce ideas off of, perfectly fine. If someone needs someone to be there to make these big decisions or to talk through on, is it this a right thing to do? Is it not? I'm there for them, whatever they want. And in counseling, it's really up to the client on how much they share, how much they don't share. I will never push a topic. We're victim-centered. So whatever the victim wants is what we provide. We will never be like, that is wrong. You should not do that. We support them and believe them and finally be that person in their life to give them that chance, I guess.
Is it okay for me to say then that you kind of give them a lot of guidance? While you do support their decisions, you do also give some guidance, correct?
We offer guidance. Like I would have some clients that would ask, is this the right thing to do? And the way that I respond is, do you think it's the right thing to do? You know, because ultimately it's not my life. It's not my decision. You just guide them, I guess, on getting back to normalcy in their life. And after those events happen, unfortunately, you never get back to a normal. So just offering support mostly.
Got it. I'm really curious, how did you or why did you go into this line of work in the first place? Because it's not exactly one of those lines of work that you can make $1 million or anything. It's not business. Why'd you get into this line of work?
Yeah. So I actually went to school for social work. I've known probably since high school that I want to help people and I want to be there for people in some way. I completed my internship working with the opposite population. So I worked with the offenders of domestic violence.
Really?
And I got a whole new, I got a whole new perspective on that. And coming in and looking into a position of a job that I want to work in, I love the field of domestic violence, sexual assault. I love being that person. So really, I just got into this work for the love of helping someone and knowing that I could be that person for someone in that time of need. And it's extremely rewarding what we do here. I love it.
Before you started helping the victims of sexual violence and of mm-hmm. domestic violence, you said you were working with the offenders. Kind of talk about what exactly were you doing, because I don't know if I caught that. What were you doing to help them or doing with them?
Yeah. So in my internship that I completed, I worked within the Partner Abuse Intervention Program. So I would do case notes. I would offer information, send out homework, write court letters, do midterm evaluations on these clients. They were either self-referred, court mandated, or DCFS mandated, where they did have a domestic battery charge. So that experience really helped me dive into this kind of work that I'm doing now. It was just on the opposite side of things, where everyone's main goal is to reduce and end domestic violence and sexual violence, right? So that really gave me a stepping stone to where I'm at now.
What was that like working with those people? I assume you had like multiple, I don't know what to call them, maybe clients, like the people that were offenders. You worked with a lot of them. Was that like intimidating? Was it kind of scary? Or what was that like for you?
Yeah. So when I first got there, I went through orientation. I was scared. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And then actually working with them and getting myself in there, they're human, you know, they're just like us. Domestic violence is a learned behavior though. So that helped me view and understand that most of these people that are committing domestic violence, not sexual violence, most of the people committing domestic violence have experienced that abuse in their childhood, and that's how they know how to cope. So that really gave me a further understanding of what domestic violence is, in a sense.
You say that the people that were offenders, they typically experienced that in their young life, or the people that were victims experienced that in their young life, and that's how they know how to cope?
It's kind of both, because when you're looking at a family and say there's a mom and a dad and a son and a daughter, and the dad is abusing the mom, that son is most likely to grow up to be an abuser. That daughter in that domestic violence situation is most likely to grow up to be a victim in their adulthood. So it's interesting to look at it like that.
Holy cow, man, just knowing that statistic kind of makes me that much more passionate about ending this all together, because if it's going on now in a household between two adults, that means that it's more than likely going to keep going on down to the next generation. So it's like, yeah, let's stop it now, you know?
Mm-hmm. And for domestic violence specifically, people don't think that their children see or are affected by what is actually happening in the home. And things have come out where that's not the case, that they're actually taking in a lot more information than what the parents might think they will be taking. Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the case. Like, kids are just way more observant than we give them credit for. They're sponges. Yeah. Like, they mm-hmm. see more than I feel like parents think they see a lot of the time.
Yeah, that is really true. And even the services that we have at Safe Journeys, we have a child and adolescent counselor that works specifically with children that have been victim to domestic violence or sexual violence. So it's prevalent in these areas. And I think that's kind of like a not known fact. People don't think it will happen here, or there's no way it happens in this small little town, when it does. Mm-hmm.
It's a really interesting topic, all in all, just what we're talking about. I know that back in the 70s is when Safe Journeys was actually founded. I think at that time it was called First Step or something like that. And back mm-hmm. in those days, in good heavens, apparently in like the 50s, domestic violence was almost normal. It was at least mm-hmm. seen as a private matter, like a private family matter. And if police got involved, it usually wasn't for long. And it was usually, you know, having the, just giving crappy advice, like don't make the husband angry, because by and large, it was usually a husband to his wife and things like that. It was just really an a crazy time to think back to. And I think we've really come a long way just in recognizing it for the horror that it is, domestic violence and sexual violence. So you think that it's more prevalent than we probably think, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Even from my standpoint of working here, are we really reaching the maximum amount of clients that we could be reaching? Because there's multiple reasons why people don't reach out for help. And that's their own decision. So we can only talk about and look at the statistics of what we have in front of us. So we can say, oh, okay, we know that we've served this many people. Is that the actual number of people that are actually being abused or going through a sexual assault in the area? Probably not. There's multiple reasons why people don't report or talk about it.
So we can assume that domestic violence and sexual violence maybe are more prevalent in the area than we really know. Can you do me the favor of helping me understand what exactly domestic violence and sexual violence entail, both as, you know, like give me the definitions of them, because I think that would help me in my understanding a lot.
Yeah. So domestic violence, it could be viewed as physical, contact hitting the skin. It could be viewed as emotional, financial abuse. If you're screaming and you're hitting and you're throwing chairs at walls, that's considered domestic violence. Sexual violence, on the other hand, sexual violence is an umbrella term for all these other terms. So there's sexual assault, sexual abuse, rape. It goes on, and each one, according to Illinois state law, pertain to a certain act for sexual violence. So if there was penetration, that would be under a certain category. Mm-hmm. If it was just rubbing, it would be under a certain category.
Yeah.
So when we talk about sexual violence, that could mean anything between sexual harassment and rape, because it's on a continuum. There's so many different things that fall under sexual violence.
Very interesting. And you brought up an interesting point to me personally. I remember doing a tiny bit of research. Like, what do I know? I'm no expert. But I remember looking up like the legal definition of rape. And I remember telling people from what I read about a year and a half ago, rape necessitates penetration. There has to be, like, from involving your sexual organs, there has to be penetration in order for rape to be considered rape in the legal sense. And I remember people were like, no, that's not the case. And it's like, I don't make the rules, but apparently, am I correct in that? Like, in order for rape to be rape, there has to be penetration? It's kind of an odd topic, but I apologize to my audience.
Rape, in its definition, is penetration of a sex organ, the anus, or a mouth. That falls all under rape. So penetration of any of those areas would be considered rape.
This show is sponsored in part by Connections of Fairview Haven. Fairview Haven Retirement Community has recently introduced a new branch called Connections of Fairview Haven. This is a licensed home service agency whose staff has the ability to provide a wide array of non-medical services for you or your loved one in the comfort and safety of your home. What does that mean exactly? It means that a member or members of the Connections of Fairview Haven team will come to you or your loved one's home and help with any services that you or they need so that you or they can remain safely at home while ensuring that all of your daily duties get accomplished. These services include running errands, meal preparation, transportation, assistance with bathing, medication reminders, skin, oral, and hair care, and even just friendly conversation, and much, much more. Additionally, this branch has partnered with some awesome local businesses to provide other services that you may need, like therapy, yard work, home repairs, and more. Connections of Fairview Haven takes all the worry out of daily living and empowers you to continue to live an abundant life your way. This program is servicing Livingston, Iroquois, and Ford counties, and they can start working for you right now with as little as one phone call to 815-692-6703. You can also learn more about this wonderful branch on their website, fairviewhaven.org. Connections of Fairview Haven, They're founded on biblical principles, and they're putting the gold back into the golden years.
Thank you for explaining that. That's actually very enlightening. I'm sure a lot of people are going to hear that for the first time. And I want to move on to something slightly different, actually, and talk about Safe Journeys as a whole. When I look them up on Google, I notice that there's no specified location. And I don't know if that's just a product of, you know, lackluster marketing or something, or someone just forgot to put it in there. But then I talked to you, and we were both kind of surprised that we had only heard of Safe Journeys recently, like in the past few years, despite its being in existence since the 70s. So it's a big operation, and it services all of Livingston and LaSalle County. That's like 2,000 square miles. So it's a big operation. Can you tell me just a little bit about, first of all, how many locations do you have? How does that all work? And are there like secret locations or something?
Yeah. So like you said, when you look us up, I think our PO box comes up for our admin office. So our admin office is located in Streeter. That's pretty common. We also have outreach offices in Peru, Ottawa, and Pontiac. And that was, those outreach offices basically formed because in 1994, there wasn't public transportation. So those outreach offices came a thing for us to be able to assist clients at a greater need, where instead of them coming to us, we can go to them. And then we do have a shelter, but it is at a confidential address. So no one besides staff that works here and local law enforcement know specifically where the shelter is at. Obviously, for safety concerns, if we have clients that are there that are fleeing a domestic situation, we don't want that address out there for people to find.
Yeah, that's very responsible and actually pretty awesome of you guys to do, I think. And I also, before we did this call, I called you personally, and I started to realize, like, there's a lot of things that you can't tell me. You guys seem to really take the secrecy component of doing what you do very seriously. So as far as confidentiality goes, you know, God forbid anyone's watching this who needs to reach out. If you do reach out to Safe Journeys, you can rest assured that they're going to keep your stuff confidential. So well done on that front.
Yes, thank you. That is one thing, once you get into this profession and what we're doing, that's a big thing, is trust. These people have had trust broken so many times throughout their life. We're a place, one of the first things we say to them is, everything you tell me is going to be confidential. Unless I get a form, a release of information saying that I could provide certain aspects of what they told me to something, whether it be court or getting them applying for housing, where we say they're receiving services. And that's pretty much all that we can say if that release is signed. But other than that, we don't discuss what we talk about. And that really upholds the integrity of what we're doing.
Can you not say anything to the people that your clients, if you see them out in public? Is that right?
Most of us that work here, we will tell our clients. COVID times are a little rough right now, so I don't know how often that would be now. But beforehand, people will tell their clients, like, if you see me out at Walmart, I will not address you. I will not look at you. It's not for the fact of me not wanting to talk to you, but more so, I don't know who you're with. How are we going to explain how we know each other, you know?
Right.
So if a client were to approach us, we would say, that's okay if you approach us, but we will not come to you first, just for safety concerns. They're with the abuser. Are they out with their parent that doesn't know what is going on? We don't approach them.
Got it. What does it look like from the time that I assume the first step in getting help from Safe Journeys is calling one of your offices? What does the whole process of things look like from the moment they call to, you know, wherever it happens to end? Like, what steps take place from the call from that point on?
Yeah. So I think to start, I'm going to preface this with what services we have. So we do have the crisis line open 24 hours. We have the emergency shelter. We have medical advocacy, legal advocacy, counseling, and then we have prevention and education. Most of our calls will be going through to the crisis line. And from there, the crisis line determines if they want to become a client. If they don't and they just need someone to talk to, that's totally fine. We're not going to be like, you need these services. If they just want to vent about what's going on or they had the situation, they offer support to them. If it does happen where they want to become a client and they want a specific service, whether it be legal advocacy or counseling, from there, the crisis line will send them to where they need to be.
I'm just curious, do people ever call and just say, like, just vent, like you said? Do they ever vent and say, oh, thank you, that's all I needed, actually. I don't want to pursue any further with anything. Thanks, and then they hang up?
Yeah, that wow. is completely possible, because if there are some, particularly I'm thinking domestic violence situations, if there are some domestic violence situations, the police are giving them their our information. You can call the hotline, you can see what they're about. And if they call and they're just like, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do about this situation, I just needed someone to talk through it with mm-hmm. and just get that support that they need, and they can hang up if they want. It's up to them. So that is an option. That is something that could happen.
Got it. Okay. Sorry to cut you off there, but
no, so no, it's okay.
After that, then what goes down?
Yeah. So, the way that our agency is separated is in domestic violence and sexual assault. So if it's a client that is calling for domestic violence, they will do the intake at over the phone on the crisis line. And then they will send out referrals to what they want. So if it's counseling, they'll send it out to a specific DV counselor, DV as in domestic violence counselor. If it's sexual violence, they'll send it to that case manager, and she will call and complete the intake, and then she will send out the referrals out to the specific services that they want. And that's how it kind of just works its way down to where they actually want to be.
Okay. And then what? Do they call them back and say, hey, we have you set up to come meet this person who is a counselor? Or do they call you back? If you call them, do they call you back and then say, come here at this day or something?
Yeah. So like, again, I'm specifically more so for sexual violence. So our case manager for sexual violence, her name's Katie. She's awesome. She's great. She'll call them, do the intake process. We'll tell them, hey, our counselor, Dana, she'll reach out to you soon. If you have any questions before then, just give me a call. And then she'll give me the referral and I call them within a day. I call them, we set up a counseling appointment, and then we go from there. And normally, like throughout our counseling sessions, they might divulge that, oh, I'm in court. So then I'll be like, hey, we have a legal advocate here and she could help you. And she'll walk you through the court process. Or if you want a civil no contact order, she'll help you file it. Like, these are options that we have. So it's just like working its way through and being like, what exactly are you looking for with these services? But to circle back to your question, yeah, I will call the client. On our referral forms, we have if we're able to leave a voicemail or not, because if they're living with their abuser, we don't want to leave our information or hint that they're getting services from us.
Yeah.
If it says leave a voicemail, I'll just say my name. I'll leave my number. I saw that you were interested in counseling services. Are you still interested in that? Give me a call. We can set up something and then just go from there.
Very interesting. I feel like this is you have to be so careful. Personally, it's kind of nerve wracking to me just to hear about. It's like, you don't want to leave a voicemail and risk, you know, someone picking up the phone and listening to that person's voicemails and be like, oh, mm-hmm. okay, so you're reaching out to so-and-so, like, who is this? And I don't know, it could get pretty scary pretty quick, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, a lot of the situations with sexual violence and domestic violence stems from power and control, having power and control over that victim. That's why we try to take precautions and when we contact them, especially with COVID. We just started going back to in-person services, having that option. So before then, it was all over the phone. Might be talking to someone that is still living in that situation and being careful and making sure they're in a safe place and kind of having, setting up code words. If you do know that they're in that situation of, hey, you know, this is our first time talking. I know that you said that you're still living there. Why don't we set up a code word for when that person's around and it's unsafe for you to talk, to kind of make sure they're safe.
I am really impressed with the amount of services, supportive services that you guys at Safe Journeys offer your clients. It's really impressive, but it takes a lot of work and I assume it takes a lot of funding. So how do you guys even stay afloat? How do you afford to do what you do?
Yeah. So we are a non-for-profit agency. It's actually grant season right now is what Susan, our executive director, says. She is the one that fills out our grants. We apply through United Way, the 708 board, the Attorney General, the GRF. There's multiple different sources that are funding us. And also with that, we also fundraise. So we actually have a fundraiser that's already taking place starting next week. It's a 5K virtual run walk.
Virtual run walk.
Yes, it is a virtual 5K. We had a local Streeter High School student made the design for these t-shirts. We put together signing up for these t-shirts, and then you have the whole next week to start running or walking or not even running or walking, but you at least bought a shirt. So that supports us. Just trying to raise awareness since April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So there's different ways that we're gaining money.
Got it. I see. Before we move on, I kind of actually want to go back a little bit to the calls themselves. When people call in, can you, and perhaps you can't even tell me, I don't know, maybe you can change names for confidentiality reasons, but have you ever had like a phone call? And I don't know if you actually have answered the phone, like when people call for the first time. But have you ever had like a startling phone call where someone explains their situation that they're currently in and you're just like, whoa, this is some heavy stuff. We need to help this lady immediately. I said lady. It doesn't have to be ladies. It can be anyone.
Yes, that is very true. I have never answered the crisis line. That's not my position. That's not the job that I do. But sometimes we do get calls to the office that we're in, and it's someone trying to reach the crisis line. So there's two different ways you can handle that call. You can be supportive and listen to what they're saying and offer them support, or you can give them the correct phone number. Most likely you're just going to answer the phone and be supportive for them without giving them the right phone number. Maybe after the conversation is over, but I could say personally, not related to the crisis line, but with counseling and what I'm doing, especially when I first started doing this work, I was not prepared at all for what I was going to hear. And that's where self-care comes into place, because we are caring what people are telling us. And how do we be ourselves after hearing all of this awful things that are happening? So I can't, unfortunately, tell you any of those stories for confidential reasons, but I could say that, yeah, there are times, I'm sure, when people have answered the crisis line and they're just so shocked by what they're hearing. And it's sad. It's disturbing what people are going through.
So out of respect for confidentiality, I won't push you too much on this question, but I do want to still give it a shot. And that's, can you tell me any like information, general information about the stories that clients of yours have told you, you know, while still respecting the confidentiality? Are there any crazy things that you've heard, like startling things or averages, common situations that people who come to you find themselves in? Can you tell me anything along those lines?
Unfortunately, like I said before, I can't really disclose any information of what I've talked to clients about or what they've told me. But I can educate. And according to Rape Abuse Incest National Network, which is RAIN for short, people that go through these sexual violence situations, crimes, because that's what they are. That's a crime.
Absolutely.
When they're abused in their childhood sexually, it's way more traumatic. And then that abuse continues throughout their life. They're most likely to have depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, mental health disorder. It goes on and on, this traumatic event. And 8 out of 10 sexual violence encounters is done by someone that's known to the victim. So imagine it's someone that's close to you that's doing this. That's a hard thing to wrap your head around. And handle.
Holy cow. Do you know any statistics on, like, is it usually a family member or anything? Or do you not know that?
Yeah. And this is up to anyone to go and look, but if you look up RAINN.org, RAINN.org, it actually has it. You can look through all these different statistics for sexual violence. I know a big percentage of it is, it could be intimate partner. So someone that you're seeing, dating, married to. Another big part is a father, a mother, a grandfather, a grandmother, a sibling. I don't know specific on the statistics for that, but like I said, if that's something that anyone is interested in educating themselves more on, you could definitely check out RAINN.org, and it goes into specifics of that statistic.
Wow. This show is sponsored in part by Greg Kurtenbaugh's State Farm office in Fairbury. When looking for an insurance provider, clarity, simplicity, and solid ratings and great prices should be at the top of your priorities. Lucky for you, Greg Kurtenbaugh's State Farm office fits that bill magnificently. Just look at his office's reviews on Google. Spoiler, they consist of nothing but 5-star ratings. Greg and his team are just awesome, and I highly recommend you giving them a call at 815-692-3673 and simply asking if they can insure your car, your home, or your life for less than your current provider, because chances are they can, and they will tell you in just a couple of minutes for free. A call to them literally cannot hurt. This office is incredible, and there are tons of reasons why so many people from this area are calling Greg's office up, getting free quotes, and making Greg their new insurance provider. So for quality insurance and for impeccable customer service, call Greg Kurtenbaugh's State Farm office at 815-692-3673. That's Greg Kurtenbaugh. His face is on 2 billboards on the west end of Fairbury. You can't miss him.
So you are primarily a sexual violence counselor. Can you tell me about how exactly you go about counseling your clients? Like, what exactly do you do to help them?
Yeah. So the way that I personally do it is I just get to know them. You know, that's what they need, right? Mm-hmm. Who wants to talk to someone that doesn't feel comfortable? You know, they're not going to talk about anything that has happened to some stranger. So I pretty much spend like my first 5 sessions of us just talking, getting to know each other. Hey, how's your dog doing? I remember you told me this about the vet, and just talking like that. And then normally by the 5th session, I get a little more down and gritty on what I'm supposed to be doing of coming up with a service plan. Hey, what are some things that you would like to work on? You know, would that be like identifying triggers or you have a hard time going out to Walmart because there's men there? Let's talk through that. Is that something you would like to work on? And we fill out the service plan together. We identify what their concerns are with what has happened and what's going on. And then we set up goals of what are some things that you think we could work on together? And we work on it together. We don't offer them solutions of being like, you need to do this, 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 and this, and everything will be a-okay, because that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. So I just try to reiterate to the clients that I'm working with is we're in this together. This is, you're leading the boat and I'm just in it for support. I'm here as a tool for you to use. So I'm pretty sure, like I stated earlier, coping skills. A lot of victims may turn to drugs and alcohol. We don't like to say that's a bad coping skill because that's something that has helped them survive. We just try to look at ways that we can increase healthier coping skills. So instead of taking a drink after this happened, hey, you said you like to color in this coloring book. I mean, why don't we try doing that for this week, you know? Mm-hmm. And just talking through that. So we complete the service plan. We plan to meet weekly, whether it be in person, on the phone. And then each session, we just work on something. And the way that I have it set up is like when we're filling out the service plan, it asks like, what are some steps that we'll take to complete this? And so I offer the idea of, you know, why don't every session we have a topic and like half of the session we'll talk about how this week has been for you. What are some things that you've done? What are some things that you haven't done? And then we'll go on to this topic of maybe it's about triggers. And do you know exactly what triggers you and what do you do in that situation? And we just talk through it. It's a conversation because a lot of times people don't even know what is going on after this happens in themselves and outside. You know, imagine being able to go to Walmart by yourself and be completely fine. And then you get sexually assaulted and you have a fear of going to Walmart.
Of course.
And you can't go out to the grocery store. So it's just, like I said earlier too, trying to get back to normalcy, which you're never normal after this event happens.
Yeah.
But with counseling, that is what primarily me and clients work on together, for example.
And something that I admire that you said that I personally like is that you don't demonize their current coping mechanisms, whatever they might be. They might be drinking, it might be alcohol, and you don't demonize them because, look, that's what's gotten them through this so far. Therefore, if it's what is keeping them in some cases alive, before you just say stop doing that, like just hear them out a little bit. Don't be so harsh like that. I see that a lot. You know, someone sees someone doing a not perfectly healthy habit and they're like, hey, you should probably quit doing that because it's not perfect. And then the person's like, dude, this gets me through the day. Like, I don't know. I just admire your level of understanding towards the person, you know, that's really nice. And then another thing, I mean, no disrespect with this comparison, but you said that imagine going to Walmart perfectly happy and everything's okay and you have a sexual assault experience and it's traumatizing. And no matter how irrational, because chances are it won't happen again, but if you go into Walmart or out in public, that's going to be a legitimate fear and it's going to rob you of nearly all of your peace. And I remember when I was a kid, I'm hesitating to say this, but I'll say it anyways because it still kind of works. I remember I was out skateboarding and I got bit by a dog and I got like a chomp in my leg and I was so frightened by dogs for like years after that, to where I would go walk around town and I would be paranoid thinking that a dog's going to come out and bite me. Despite that never happening prior to that one incident in my entire life, now I think that there's always a legitimate chance that a dog's going to come out and bite me. So although it's irrational, it's incredibly real. So maybe that can give some understanding to the listeners a little bit.
Yeah, I would like to just say it's not irrational what they're going through and what they're feeling. And
I apologize. Like,
I know, it's okay. And the part where you said the chances are that it probably won't happen again, the chances are that it probably will happen again. Because these perpetrators, these offenders, they prey on vulnerable people. And if they can sense when something has already happened, right? And they know how to get what they want, because it's all about that power and control. So the way we view things is like, wow, that might not seem like, you know, that might not seem like a big deal. Oh, you can't go to Walmart. But once you know the background of, oh my God, like they are fearful for their life when they're around men. And one time these men looked at them funny in Walmart, and it's just like, again, it's PTSD, you know, mm-hmm. We don't talk this way about veterans in a war and how that PTSD affects them. But when it comes to sexual assault survivors, it's like, oh, that's like nothing. And that's wrong because they're going through the exact same thing, just in a different way than veterans. And yeah.
Man, I feel like a lot of people don't understand the severity of the PTSD, not even for lack of a better term, that's really what it is, of these people who have experienced sexual assault. Example A of someone who doesn't understand how that works and how severe it is. Yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay, because this is what this is. This is about education, you know? And thanks, if we take this one little piece of being like, wow, okay, Paul actually like understood this, and now you're able to talk about it with other people and be like, you know, that's not right. If you're saying that, that doesn't seem right. And that again, like helps, that helps what we're all doing,
right.
Is educating yourself on the topic, others, if you feel comfortable, and being like, oh, I actually heard from this random lady on this random like podcast thing that said that that's not right.
That's the whole point of this show, is to educate and enlighten people on important topics and issues. So we're actually on the right path. So thank you.
Look at us.
So sharp transition here. Do you, I noticed you said something about self-care earlier for the people that do what you do. Have you, is it hard to battle with, like, do you ever become overwhelmed with emotion or empathy for the people that you help? Because I imagine it's a seriously emotional line of work that you're in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was actually one of my biggest fears, when I first thought about going into social work, as I am a very emotional person. I cry at anything, everything, happy, sad, mad. That's just like one of the ways that I express myself, is crying or being emotional in that sense. And it's not bad. It's not bad to be like that and express emotion. But that was one of my fears of, what if I'm working with a client and they're telling me something awful and I just start crying? And I'm in that situation, like, what do I do? And luckily, the professors of where I went to, they said, it's okay to cry. Like, you are a human, and it's okay to let them see you cry, but it just matters on, it's not about you, it's about them. So cry, let it out, do a 2-second tear, dry yourself up, and be there for them, because that is what they need. Experience wise in what I'm doing, I've had a lot better like regulation of how I feel. I've never been in that situation where I feared that I would be in yet, but I've definitely felt very strong emotions for what I'm hearing. And that's when you really rely on your coworkers and your supervisor, and you talk through it. And I'm very upset after this phone call, and it's harder too if it's on the phone, because you're not face to face. Like, they might be telling you something, but I can't read their body language over the phone. So then it's like, well, they might have said this, and I don't know, I might take it this way, and I'm just worried and sad.
Yeah.
And those are all common feelings. But again, having that support of my coworkers and my supervisor and the agency in general, of valuing that, and being a safe space for all of us to talk about some things that are on our mind. And I also get clinical supervision from someone that is licensed, that she provides a lot of support for me working through these clients. But ultimately, the best thing is to try and leave work at work and not bring it home, because then you're just dwelling in those emotions, which ultimately isn't helping anyone.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting when you said your professors told you to let the tear out for a second if you need to, but remember, it's about them and you're there for them. There's a time and a place where you should try to be strong. And that might be controversial of me to say, but I firmly believe that, you know, if someone's, it's all good, it's all fine to cry and things like that when you gotta cry, you know, when you're emotional, to let it out and not put up some shield, you know. But I think it's important, yeah, to recognize that, hey, sometimes it's not exactly okay to just let it all out. Like, when you're hearing someone else's problems, maybe keep it together. Would you agree with that? Is there a time and place to keep it together for the sake of the other person?
I think as us being humans, you can't really control it. If something makes you sad, it makes you sad. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it just depends on how long you dwell on it. And the point that you made about time to be strong, maybe crying in that sense is strong. That makes the client, sometimes these clients are numbing their feelings, you know, yeah. They're not feeling what I'm feeling. They're numb to what they went through. So maybe if that is the thing of they see me cry, they're like, oh my gosh, wait, I haven't cried in like 2 years, you know? So who determines what the strength and weakness is in that sense? Not sure, but I think there is no set in stone of how to be with a client. It's your own being. Each counselor, each person that works with a client, we're all different personalities, right? So how I am might not fit a client, and that's okay, because if they say something of like, oh, you know, I don't really think it's working out with Dana, then I can refer her to a different counselor, or her or him to a different counselor, mm-hmm. or move them around. So if they're not feeling like they're getting what they need from that person, they can get it from somewhere else,
yeah.
Within our agency. And if ultimately it's not our agency, then we can help them with referrals to someplace outside of our agency.
Thank you for that. Yeah. Valuable points here. And I appreciate the alternative perspective on that whole thing. We've had to correct ourselves and mention that men are also, they do also come to you guys sometimes. I would just like clarification. Is it mostly women that utilize your services?
I would say in general, mm-hmm. A majority is women. And that's for multiple different reasons. We know that violence against men happen. They just don't report it or come out as often as women are more likely to. 1 in 3 men have experienced an attempted rape or a rape within their lifetime.
1 in 3?
1 in 33.
Oh, I thought you said 1 in 3. I'm like, I got 4 friends. Like, holy cow. Okay, 33. That's still, it's
you
not
want
easy.
Me to say that again?
Honestly, no. It's okay. That's a startling number still, though, 33.
Yes.
3 would have been just... I mean, yeah, I
well,
would've...
one in six women have had an attempted rape or completed rape against them.
Holy crap.
And this is in America.
Absolutely nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly. Do you know, is it a certain age of women that is most liable or most likely to have? Does that 1 in 6, does that fall in like a certain age range?
That's throughout all of them. But again, on rain.org, they go into specifics on it. But I know that the range of 18 to like 29 is the highest percentage of women that have come forward with sexual assaults. And that's not to negate that over that age or under that age don't report. It's just that number is the biggest.
Okay. All right. I've got you here. I am talking to someone who literally works in the field. This has been a conversation that I've been engaged in with multiple different people. Like, I think everyone's probably talked about this. And pardon me if this is sensitive or if I'm going about it in an insensitive way. I don't mean to. But what determines an incidence of sexual assault? And what is not okay to do? And what can you basically go to jail for? Do you know? Like, what's not okay? Is it not okay to hit on a girl at a bar or something like that, and just to say like, hey, you are really pretty? Like, what's not okay?
That is up to the person that it is happening to. Each person has their own limits when it comes to hitting on someone. That is up to them. You know, you might view it as being nice and being caring, and she might view it as, oh, this is creepy.
This show is sponsored in part by Forest Edge Tree Service. This winter has been catastrophic on all of our trees, and it's led to tons of damage. Ice, snow, and strong winds lead to downed limbs, trees, and power lines, causing massive damage to your homes, cars, and properties. Face it, your yard is no place for looming, dead, or damaged trees. It's just a matter of time before one comes down, and whether by your choice or not. This is why you need to hire the services of Forest Edge Tree Service. If you have trees or tree stumps that you want gone, simply give Joe Rudin at Forest Edge Tree Service a call or text, for those of you who don't enjoy phone calls, at 815-615-3037 to get a free quote today. Forest Edge Tree Service is fully insured, so if something goes wrong, it's not coming out of your wallet. And they're staffed with trained professionals who use cutting-edge equipment to get the job done right, so there is no chance of anything going wrong in the first place. These experienced pros take pride in their attention to detail, in their cleanup, and in their relationships with customers, which is why they're Livingston County's premier tree service provider. Being proactive with your land can save you money in the long run and help you avoid all the headaches of unplanned downed trees. So keep your family, pets, vehicles, and neighbors safe by being a responsible adult and calling or texting Joe Rudin with Forest Edge Tree Service at 815-615-3037 to get your dangerous and annoying trees off of your property. That's Forest Edge Tree Service, Livingston County's premier tree service provider.
Each person has their own limits. When it comes to hitting on someone, that is up to them. You know, you might view it as being nice and being caring, and she might view it as, oh, this is creepy. And that's not to negate the person that's going out and doing it, but there's different perceptions on it. I'm not a legal advocate. I don't work within the court system. That would be something to educate yourself on, of looking at what could actually make a case and what could not. But I mean, we've had in the media, we've had cases of sexual harassment with whether it be Bill Cosby, whether it be Donald Trump, of these women coming out saying that they've said this or they've done this to them. So ultimately, I'm not the law. So I can't determine that.
Right. And this might be, your answer might be along the same lines here. What is considered consent in the instance of two people, you know, if two people have sex? Is it true that if they are both intoxicated or have any alcohol in their system, or if one person has alcohol in their system, can they no longer at that point give consent? Maybe I'm
correct.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's kind of alarming though.
There's this really educational video. It's called Consent is Tea, and it's on YouTube, and it shows all these steps of, well, this person was a little tipsy. You still don't give them tea if they don't ask for tea. Tea meaning sex in that instance. And it goes through all these different scenarios of, if they're not blatantly saying, hey, I want sex, let's have sex. Yes, that is not consent then. And that might be viewed different among different relationships where you know that this is a sign or this is you saying yes, but that is within like personal relationships. I don't know, but I would say in general, if they're not saying, let's have sex, yes, I want to have sex, that's not consent.
And if they say, let's have sex, and they have alcohol in their system, it's no good. Like that's like it's kind of, it's a bit.
That's a good topic. Uh-huh. But I would say for further understanding of more than I can provide is to look up consent is tea, and that might be able to help you more than I could explain.
Understood completely. You got to kind of save yourself too. I don't want you saying something that's in any way like one iota off or incorrect, because then you could be in trouble. So understood completely. Okay. So you guys do a lot of things. You help a lot of people get back on their feet, get the help they need. What happens like after that? Do you keep in touch with people to make sure that they're still doing good? Do you keep tabs on their success? What's it look like after they've came and went through your program, for lack of a better term?
Mm-hmm. We do not reach out to clients once services have been terminated, and services can be terminated for a number of reasons of they've completed their goals. They don't see a need of getting this service anymore. Something like that, but they can always call back and be like, hey, I'm needing this. And then we'll go through the process of finding them what they need. When it comes to success, we can't really measure what success looks like for anyone. I mean, success for one person might be that they've reached out to us and they've been able to talk to someone. Success might be that they got into housing. Success might be that they got their kids into school. So really, we can't measure what the success level of someone that receives our services looks like.
Do you have more people coming into Safe Journeys for reasons of sexual violence or for reasons of domestic violence? I'm just curious.
So like statistics wise, and since March of 2020 to now, our clients are more likely seeking services for domestic violence. But that does not negate that there is still sexual violence that is happening. We just have more clients that are here for or getting services for domestic violence.
You don't know any like numbers or anything, do you? Is it like 99% domestic violence? Or I'm a big numbers guy, so
yeah, I did not figure out the percentage, but we have a little over 400 clients that are seeking services for domestic violence. And then for sexual violence, I think it's a little over 100 that are seeking services for sexual violence.
Okay. Got it. Is that like this year or what?
Yeah, that's a lot from March 2020 to now.
Holy moly. Are there any signs that we as people watching this can look out for maybe to just to spot or maybe to be aware of so that we can maybe spot someone who has been a victim of sexual and or domestic violence? Like, is there anything that we could look for just as everyday people?
Just looking in general is a good start. I feel like we're in a time where people are glued to their phones, especially with COVID happening too. But when you're out and about, maybe just looking around and seeing how people are. I can't really say that there's certain things to look out for because some people hide it very well that they're getting abused or that this is happening to them. So to say one thing and be like, yeah, that's definitely the reason you should approach them and save them is not the case because it can look very different to very different people of what that abuse looks like on the outside.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say anything in general, but it would just be more so looking and watching and being there when someone does come forward and saying that, hey, I got sexually assaulted. And instead of being like asking those questions of what did you wear? Oh, you were drinking or you had sex with him prior. Just being like, I'm so sorry that happened to you and believing them. Because the rates of false reports for sexual assault is like the same as any other crime. It's like 2 to 8%. And when someone has a theft, we don't say, well, you didn't lock your house or you didn't lock that window, so that's why they broke in. No, we don't say that to someone that's
great
going
analogy.
Through that.
Yeah.
So it's just looking at that and taking it for what they're saying and being like, I am so sorry that happened. And thank you for sharing that with me. I know that must have been really hard to come forward with and supporting them. And I feel like once everyone starts doing that for victims, that's really going to help in the long run of going through these issues and making it what it is as a crime and not victim blaming.
I think you are absolutely right in that. Yeah. Oh yeah. Have you ever heard of the hand sign or something like that? Someone who is experiencing abuse at home can hold up in public or something. I don't even know what it is. I think it's like I should have probably looked this up before I talked to you. I don't know. I'm probably doing bad sign language at this point, but there's something that you can do, isn't there, to like kind of tell people?
I remember what you're talking about. I think once COVID hit again, COVID is impacting everyday life. But I think once COVID hit, I remember seeing stuff on social media where if you were on a Zoom call and you did this certain signal that would notify that something was happening. I'm not sure if that's a universal thing. I can only talk about what we do at the agency and how we do it. And like I already explained before about if we set up a code word, then we know that something has happened or that they don't want to talk because that abuser is around. But I do remember seeing that. I just don't know how true that is because it is on social media and you have to take everything like that with a grain of salt on what is actually a thing or a policy. But I could say none of these organizations that have set up and allowed our organization to take place have come out and said, these are the signs to look for. So that is the only thing that I could speak of.
So nothing's been made like super official then?
Mm-hmm. That we know of. I've talked about it with my supervisor, Melissa, and I've talked about it with the executive director of the agency. And they said, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen some hand signals get some bad press on social media before. Like, I remember, I'll do it because I know this, like this, the OKs thing. And kids always went like, oh, you looked at the circle and they'd like punch you in the arm or something. And they said like that meant like white power or something, which is completely untrue. Like there's a million pictures of kids do just, I don't know, you know. So I've seen some hand signals get misconstrued and what they mean and things like that. So there's a good chance that that thing about the hand signal I'm talking about isn't a universal thing.
It might be, it might not be. I don't know, but I do remember and recall seeing that once COVID started happening on that.
So we're kind of wrapping this thing up here. So Safe Journeys has the mission of empowering and supporting anyone who has been a survivor of domestic or sexual violence. How can we as people and the people watching this video, how can we do our part to help support that mission?
Yeah. So like I stated earlier, believing. If someone comes to you and says that this has happened to them, don't question them. Do not question them. Just offer them support. I'm so glad that you told me. Thank you. I'm so glad that I was that safe space for you. Even having a conversation about it with your family. More likely than not, someone in your family, you know someone that this has affected directly or indirectly. So just being there, raising awareness in your own way, whether that this be something that gets you fired up. We have volunteers here. We offer internships. When we do fundraising, getting involved in the community and raising awareness for this topic. But ultimately it starts at home and it starts with believing. And that ultimately can change and alter the way that the victim's life will go. If they have a supportive system at home that says, I believe you 100% that this happened, that already puts them on such a better track in their adulthood life or farther down on life than someone that says that didn't happen. I don't believe that. That would never happen. Why would they do that to you? That then leads them down possibly a wrong path of how they start to cope with the abuse that happened. So just believe. Start by believing.
Holy cow. Very, very well put. This conversation has been extremely enlightening. I've learned a ton. I've made myself look like a fool once or twice, but it's all for the sake of learning, and it was fantastic. And just, Dana, thank you so much for coming on to the show. I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, thank you. And I just want to say if anyone finds themselves in this situation or needs help with domestic violence or sexual assault, we are always here. Like I stated before, our hotline is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you can reach us at 800-892-3375.
There we go. Yeah, I really hope this conversation brings the issue of domestic violence and sexual assault to the forefront of people's minds and just raises awareness also of the great organization Safe Journeys. So, all right, that's a wrap. Thank you very much, Dana.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Paul Garcia Show. If you enjoy this show and you're watching it on Facebook, please like and share this video. If you're on YouTube, please consider subscribing to my channel. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving the show a 5-star rating if you think we deserve that. This all helps tremendously with the show's growth and recognition, and it makes it more likely that awesome folks from this area will agree to come on in the future. If you want to support the show financially with a small donation, feel free to do so on the Venmo app by submitting a couple of bucks to The Paul Garcia Show. A lot of you have been doing this and it helps so much, holy cow, so thank you sincerely. And if you really want to support the show and gain access to exclusive footage from each episode and early access to each episode,
you can become a patron on patreon.com/PaulGarcia for just $1 a month. I'll also be posting some future debates on that page that I won't be posting on Facebook and that I might eventually post to YouTube, so if you want to gain access to those, become a patron. Anyways, until next Sunday, I'm Paul Garcia. Thank you for listening to the show. God bless and have a great week.